välkomna till Paleopodden. Idag är det en podd som jag har spelat in i London med Chris Kresser från USA. Han pratar om paleo för oss nordbor på ett väldigt spännande och intressant sätt. Jag hoppas ni kommer lära er mycket. Jag bad också er skriva och ställa lite frågor till honom. Tyvärr så hann vi bara ta med en fråga. Sen var det dags för Chris att springa in på scen igen. Vill du läsa mer om Chris Kresser så gör gärna det på hans hemsida chriskresser.com. Här kommer intervjun. Håll till godo.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
So what are you doing in London? Tell us.
Well, I'm here to teach a couple of seminars. So yesterday I taught one to the general public on paleo nutrition and lifestyle, or paleo type of diet and health. And then today I'm speaking to clinicians and talking about functional medicine as well as paleo nutrition and lifestyle as applied to clinical practice.
Yeah.
And then the future of medicine, you know, what's possible moving forward.
That's really exciting area.
Yeah.
And you are in the forefront of that.
Well, it's
always researching and new.
It's something
studies.
I'm very passionate about, certainly, yeah. and dedicate most of my time to. And I really believe that what we need more than ever now to advance our health is a growing number of clinicians that understand how to practice functional medicine and help their patients with
exactly. I listened to you yesterday, and you got the question from the audience: are they? And you in the UK, like.
Yeah, I didn't know how to answer that.
No, but do you think there's any you in Scandinavia?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I from what I've seen, there's a lot more interest now in Scandinavia in this diet and lifestyle.
Absolutely,
and
yes.
In functional medicine in general.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to take the opportunity to talk about a little bit about Scandinavia.
Sure.
Because as you said yesterday, it's not a coincidence that we have so many autoimmune diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain that a little bit?
Sure. So there is a strong correlation between autoimmune disease and latitude.
Yeah.
So the further away from the equator you get, the higher the rates of autoimmune disease. And I mentioned yesterday that Scotland has the highest rates of Crohn's disease, which is an inflammatory bowel disease that's autoimmune in origin.
They do. Okay.
In the whole world.
Wow.
There are some different theories about why there is this association between latitude and autoimmune disease.
Mm.
One of them, of course, the most well-known theory is that it's vitamin D related.
Uh-huh.
Vitamin D plays a really important role in regulating the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, vitamin D deficiency becomes more and more common the further away you get from the equator because the less sun exposure there is in those places. There's other research suggesting that a compound called nitric oxide is involved as well, which is also produced when the sun hits skin.
Yes.
And it plays an immunomodulatory role, so mm-hmm. it helps to regulate the immune system. And then a third theory, which is more recent, but I think even more compelling in some ways, is called the hygiene hypothesis
or
the old friends hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the idea that We co-evolved with a number of commensal organisms. These
mm-hmm.
are organisms that can live inside of our gut, but they don't necessarily cause any problems.
No.
They're just kind of along for the ride. And in fact, they may even benefit us in certain ways. We have a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
So an example would be certain types of helminths or worms like hookworm that have inhabited the guts or mammals in general for hundreds of millions of years.
And we don't have them anymore.
We don't have them. Not far away from the equator.
Okay.
Exactly. So the more sanitized an environment becomes, so as countries become more developed, they develop better sanitation practices.
Yeah.
And the upside of that is you get a lot less acute infection.
Of course.
And so I'm not suggesting that we should go back to living in unsanitary conditions because it has made a huge difference in terms of preventing deaths due to acute illnesses that
mm-hmm.
can be caused by poor sanitary conditions.
Yeah, of course.
But sometimes there's a dark side even to positive changes,
mm-hmm.
and it appears that there has been a dark side to mm-hmm. completely sanitizing the environment, because now we no longer harbor these hookworms and other possibly beneficial organisms that we've had for our entire human evolutionary history, and the immune system kind of freaks out when they're not there. It doesn't know what to do with all that excess energy that used to be used to kind of keep those organisms in check, or that was tuned in a way, like almost tuning an instrument. That's the effect these organisms had. And so without these hookworms, the immune system kind of goes haywire, and that manifests in a couple of different ways. It can manifest as hypersensitivity to allergens. So these could be food allergens or environmental allergens like pollen or pet dander.
Yeah, extremely common this week.
Right, and growing more and more common. And then the second way would be in autoimmune disease, which of course are also becoming more and more common, both in Scandinavia and in the U.S. And in the U.K. And virtually all other developed countries.
Yes, so you, you said that it's like 80 different autoimmune diseases discovered, and one every month.
It just seems like it.
Is,
you know,
is it due to that?
I think a combination of all three of those factors is at least in part responsible for the growth in autoimmune disease. But so I think the three causes or contributing factors that we just mentioned play a role, but I don't think they explain it alone. There's also poor diet to consider, lack of sleep. Many people in the U.S., at least, I'm not sure what the statistics are in Scandinavia, are getting fewer than 6 hours of sleep per night. When most research suggests we need 7 to 8, chronic unrelenting stress, inappropriate physical activity, so too much sitting and not enough exercise on the one hand.
Exactly what we're doing, like all those things,
all
it mix
things
up to
like a... so it's a modern lifestyle in general is not is antithetical to health and it promotes autoimmune disease. But then you add, for Scandinavia, the addition of common vitamin D deficiency, a lack of sun exposure causing lower levels of nitric oxide, and then the highly sanitized environment, you get kind of a perfect recipe
in
a way for autoimmune disease.
Toxic mix.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, if you always stress that paleo is personal. You have your personal paleo code. And I'm interested in, like, in Scandinavia, do you think we could have like a Nordic way of paleo that includes things that are like not allowed in basic paleo in other parts of the world?
As you may know, I think dairy products are healthy and beneficial when they're well tolerated by the individual. And so what determines tolerance? Well, on the one hand, it's whether you can digest lactose, which is the sugar in dairy products, in milk. And lactose tolerance is one of the genetic changes that has occurred recently over the past 10,000 years since we switched to agriculture. And in fact, studies suggest that up to 95% of Scandinavians are lactose tolerant. Whereas if you go to Asia, that number is, you know, well below 20%. So this is you know, why personalization matters.
If you don't have like an inflammation or an autoimmune disease, you could well add dairy.
Absolutely. If you don't react to the proteins,
the
which, you know, the inflammatory condition.
That's a cross-reaction with the gluten.
Yes, it could be.
Could be.
And if you tolerate lactose, you can enjoy full fat and fermented dairy products. Even if you don't tolerate lactose, if you're in that 5%, you still might be able to tolerate dairy products if you consume fermented dairy, because the lactose in fermented dairy products is almost
zero.
Lactose,
reduces
it significantly.
So the other thing we have a lot of discussions about is legumes, beans and lentils. Well, you talked yesterday. Well, it's the problem is the lectin, and it's kind of poisonous. But there's a way around it, you said.
Cook them.
Cook them.
don't eat raw legumes or raw beans. There's very the thing is, lectin is ubiquitous in foods. It's not just in legumes. It's in a lot of other foods.
Yeah, exactly.
Fruits and vegetables.
That, you never talk about that. You have it in fruit as well.
You can't avoid lectins in food. You won't be able to eat anything.
No.
So the it's the dose makes the poison, right? So the studies that some of the paleo advocates point to when they say we shouldn't eat legumes involved people that became sick by eating uncooked kidney beans or undercooked kidney beans in a hospital setting.
Who does that?
So the message there should not be don't eat legumes because they're toxic. It should be don't eat undercooked legumes. And so if you'd cook the foods, most of the lectins will be destroyed.
Soak them overnight and cook them.
Yep.
But they're not so nutritious, are they?
Well, so the nutrient density in terms of protein and then vitamins and minerals for legumes are not as, it's not as strong as, say, organ meats and meats and vegetables.
No, exactly.
Vegetables.
So you shouldn't pick that instead of eating.
Exactly. No. But if you enjoy, you know, two or three times a week in the context of a diet that's nutrient dense, some meals with legumes, not only is that okay, it might even be beneficial because legumes contain resistant starch, which helps to feed the beneficial bacteria in the gut.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about putting together a Nordic paleo.
Great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then you have to look at what do we have mm-hmm. in Scandinavia. We have legumes.
Yeah.
We have all dairy we can eat.
That's right. Yeah.
And also we have
the genes to tolerate it.
The genes to tolerate it. Yeah. And one thing we love in Sweden is potatoes, of course.
Yes.
So
yeah.
What about that?
Yeah, I love potatoes too. And I've never seen any convincing evidence that potatoes are problematic. So they've been maligned for a number of reasons. Number one, like from a paleo perspective, they are frowned upon because they may contribute to autoimmune or exacerbate autoimmune conditions. Mm-hmm. But number one, that's not true in every person. And I've never seen any evidence that actually points to that. It's just more anecdotal that some people with autoimmune disease don't do well with nightshades, and potatoes are a nightshade.
Yes, exactly. But that's another issue.
Right. And again, so if you don't have autoimmune disease, then that doesn't apply to you. And even if you do, it may not apply to you. You know, you can try removing them for a period of time and then add them back in. The other reason they've been maligned is because they're high on the glycemic index, which is a way of measuring how food impacts
your... Mr. Cordain points that out.
Exactly, and many others, low-carb advocates.
It's like eating sugar for breakfast if you have a hash brown.
Yes, but the glycemic index is very problematic, and I've actually written some articles summarizing research that suggests it's not useful as a way of determining what you should eat and how to stay lean.
That's old news.
Yeah. Exactly. And if you eat a potato, your blood sugar might rise a little bit, but then your body will make insulin. It will lower the blood sugar, and that's a normal response. Just a normal response.
And if you eat it together with it, like
if you have full-fledged type 2 diabetes with beta cell failure and you're not producing any insulin, then maybe you won't be able to tolerate potatoes, but that's no reason for everybody else to avoid them. And they're very high in potassium, which is a really beneficial nutrient for blood pressure mm-hmm. and cardiovascular disease prevention. So I like them.
Do you think it's something else we could add that I don't know about?
Well, I don't know whether you're considering foods like dark chocolate, paleo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I do.
I do. Well, I don't eat it so much. It's just a little treat once a month or something for me.
So dark chocolate, I mean, if you look at the research, there's amazing research on the benefits of dark chocolate. Yeah. And, you know, here, of course, we're not talking about milk chocolate that's very sweet with a lot of sugar, but just dark chocolate. It's rich in antioxidants and may help protect against a lot of disease. Coffee is similar. If you actually look at the research on coffee, it's mostly beneficial and protects against...
Well, we drink a lot of
coffee. I was going to say, I would assume that would be part of the Nordic paleo
absolutely.
Diet.
To keep us awake, I suppose.
Yeah, and I went to Sweden actually in my early 20s and spent some time there, and I noticed that some people there drink alcohol occasionally, too.
Oh, yes. We're in vodka belt, as we call it.
So, you know, the studies also suggest that moderate alcohol consumption can be beneficial.
Okay.
Well,
I don't think I want to include that.
Yeah.
Because it's poison.
Yeah.
For the body, but
it can be. It can be poison, but it's interesting when you look at the research on alcohol consumption. It's not. Uh-huh. It generally has a beneficial effect, but the problem that people have with alcohol is the moderation part.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So then I will. Continue, and I would love to hear some, if we could have some contact later on, if you could give me some more input on the Nordic paleo coming together, maybe.
I mean, seafood, of course, is part of any paleo diet, I assume in a Nordic paleo diet it would be emphasized.
Well, you know, we eat the herring, seal.
Which is a very great, good, cold water, fatty fish.
Cold water, fatty fish, so we should continue that.
Absolutely.
Maybe not... drown it in sugar. Like
right. Mm. Oh, is that the typical thing? I think herring is pretty low in mercury also, from what I remember, in terms of that is a concern for some species of fish. Mm-hmm. But the good news about that is most of the cold water fatty fish species are not the high mercury species. So if you stick to the ones that are most beneficial, mm-hmm. You can benefit. The other thing that you have some of in Scandinavia is cod liver oil. And
yes.
That's, of course, an old tradition for you. And the benefit of cod liver oil is not just the EPA and DHA that it contains, but the vitamin A and the vitamin D, which people in Scandinavia tend to be deficient in. So that's another case of a traditional practice that had a lot of wisdom behind it that we now understand even better why it was so important.
So you always talk about cod liver oil, but if you just eat the fish cod, is that sufficient?
If you eat the fish liver, sufficient, but not just the fish, because the liver is what contains the vitamin A and the vitamin D. And
speaking of that, you asked the audience yesterday if they had like offal when they grew up.
Yeah.
And you were surprised.
I was impressed. Usually in the U.S., when I ask that question, maybe a third of the room or maybe 20% raises their hand. And my guess is that half of them are being a little...
lying about them, it.
Maybe not lying, but overestimating what they eat, you know, trying to impress me perhaps. But here I would say half the room or more raise their hand.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the UK, and I'm not sure you could tell me in Scandinavia, offal consumption didn't decline the way it did in the U.S. And it's not looked at as a... In the U.S., it's almost looked at as a kind of dirty thing to eat liver. It's not here.
Since we're looking at the U.S. so much in Sweden, you know, we have a lot of immigrants and the history, we tend to copy a lot of your opinions. But on offal, like liver, kidney, we love that still. We have like liver pate.
Yeah.
That's almost the most common spread on bread,
right.
Except for cheese then, maybe.
Right, right.
And growing up, we had like a liver stew in school.
Yeah.
Like once a week almost.
Yeah.
So it's...
That's great. Yeah, the U.S. tends to export a lot of bad habits around the world, so I'm glad you didn't take that one on.
Yeah.
It is changing in the U.S. now, especially in the foodie scene, you know, like a lot of chefs and high-end restaurants are starting to include offal on the menu. And
but to hide it in, like, flavors of other stuff, maybe?
I don't know. I mean, I went to a restaurant recently that had bone marrow appetizer,
which
was really amazing. Yeah. Great to see. They were so serving it on little... crostini sort of toast, but you know, you got to start somewhere.
And bone broth, of course.
Yes,
is really...
bone broth is really a great addition to the diet. It's rich in glycine, which helps to heal the gut and helps with tissue regeneration. And I imagine, particularly in the northern climate in the winter, it's really a great thing to have, you know, to help warm you up on a winter day.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah,
I cook it a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I asked my audience in Sweden if they had any questions for you, and you know, the mailbox was like jammed. So I'm just going to pick a few.
Yeah, sure.
So excuse me, all listeners, if I didn't pick your question. Anna asks about, you always talk about the importance of eating grass-fed. What do you think about that? Is that so important or...
I do think it's important. There are a couple of reasons for it. I think the main reason is actually one that doesn't get talked about a lot, which is antibiotic resistance.
Yeah.
So in conventionally raised animals, they're given antibiotics to grow them fatter, faster.
Mm-hmm.
And the low level residue of antibiotics that remain in the meat can actually, the bacteria in our gut can become resistant to those organisms. And so down the line, at some point, if we need to take antibiotics for life-threatening infection, eating this kind of meat could actually prevent those antibiotics from working the way that they're supposed to.
Yeah, you get multi-resistant
bacteria.
Yeah.
So that's one big problem. Another issue is they contain a lot less of the beneficial omega-3 fat. So it's interesting. They contain about the same amount of omega-6, But in conventional meat, there's about 3 times less omega-3.
So that's all we had. Yeah. We had like time to talk about, but it was really interesting to listen to.
Yeah, great to speak with you as well, and I just want to say hello to all your listeners in Sweden. As I mentioned, I traveled there in my 20s. It was one of my favorite countries I've ever been to.
Oh, so, that's great. Yeah. Yeah, you're very welcome back.
Yeah, I'd love to come back sometime.
If you would like to come to Stockholm, that would be lovely.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Look forward
okay.
to it.
Good luck today, and hope to speak to you again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tack för att ni lyssnade. Är ni nyfikna på mer paleo så gå gärna in på swedishpaleo.se eller på svenskapaleoshoppen.se där vi lägger upp nya produkter som vi tycker är spännande. Vi handplockar från hela världen. Hittills är det inte så mycket i sortimentet, men har du tips på saker som du vill vi ska plocka in så hör gärna av dig. Skriv till cecilia.nilsson@swedishpaleo.se. Det var allt för den här gången. Hej då! Mm-hmm.